That should wake you up. I'm Gary Knoll, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City, and I'd like to welcome you from all over the world. Today, we're going to look at the latest on chemotherapy. I presented an audio clip just a day ago where a medical doctor talked about the fact that only 3% of the people who undergo chemotherapy actually benefited from it, 97% are harmed. And a lot of those 500,000-plus people who die each year are dying because of the chemotherapy. It's estimated that 50% of those people have died because of the treatment. Now we're looking at figures of over 250,000 Americans dying each year from the treatment. Now then, let's just say that we go back 20 years. You're looking at millions, over 5 million Americans, have died because of the treatment. Shouldn't that get someone's attention? But it hasn't. I'll explain why, with two new studies that have just come up, including, quote, the failure of chemotherapy as more patients abstain from the treatment, more survive who abstain. Interesting. Plus, a separate article, chemotherapy can cause metastasis of your existing cancer. Plus, on Health and Nutrition Today, we're going to talk about fish oils can improving muscle function in women and how probiotics can impact the severity of multiple sclerosis. This is a brand new study from a Cashin University Medical Center. And then from Trinity College in Dublin, inflammation turns your energy factories, the mitochondria, into toxic factories. Very interesting new study. And from University of Sydney, keep calm. Anger can trigger a heart attack. And by the way, it also can trigger microstrokes in the brain. One of my friends just recently had a microstroke because of an angry episode. So it's important keeping your calm. Plus today, I'm going to look at one of President Obama's legacies that no one discusses. I haven't seen a single word about this anywhere in the mainstream media. And that is, he is the ultimate arms-in-chief. He is the dealer. He is the arms dealer. Why is this important? I'll share my views, and then we're going to open up our line for talkback so that you can share yours about how, on the one hand, we seem to be living in a disconnected universe of reality. We say we don't want terrorists, and indeed we don't, and yet our very actions by working with countries such as Saudi Arabia and Qatar and United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, by giving them billions of dollars in weapons, means those weapons ends up in the hands of the terrorists, who are then funded by our allies. So because we're doing business with the allies, we accept that as a normal course and cost of doing business. I remember some years ago, I spoke with a lawyer who was handling a major lawsuit against a manufacturer of a product that killed over 60,000 Americans. Some have stated it's as high as 500,000. In any case, they paid about $5 billion in damages, but the company made $22 billion in sales. And he simply said, Gary, understand something. When Ford or General Electric or General Motors make any defective product, they just factor in the cost of doing business. No one goes to jail. They pay a fine. They factor in that fine. They factor in what's going to happen. So just imagine that we're fighting terrorists that wouldn't exist if we hadn't invaded Afghanistan and Iraq, and now Libya and Syria. We fund with different types of intelligence and supply them with weapons for them then to give this to the terrorists who then use it against us or our allies or other people that we don't like. The American public just doesn't seem to grasp this. They're not wrapping their mind around this. We will today. So we're going to deal with that. Also, I did a two-hour special last night. A lot of you watched it and listened to it. It was on fake news and a new form of McCarthyism. In other words, anyone who offers a dissenting point of view than the status quo of the government or corporate America is now considered a fake news provider. Paul Craig Roberts, there's nothing fake about what he does. He's a high-level scholar. All the people that you would respect are on that list. I felt, as did a couple of the guests, that this was simply a lead-up to where people such as our sister station WBAI, where I've been on every day for 40 years, would be set up so that they wouldn't be allowed on the Internet. Truthdig, a lot of these outstanding websites that have outstanding journalists would be barred. They would be banned. A new form of McCarthyism. I think it was in Wheeling, West Virginia, where Eugene McCarthy held up a group of names, says on this list are names of, you know, communist sympathizers or communists, and they've infiltrated every aspect of our government. What wasn't true? None of it was true. But it caused, for years, it caused a lot of people to suffer. I believe that this is the beginning of a witch hunt upon every progressive organization, individual, who has a public forum to attack them. So, we are fighting back. I'm going to be doing a whole series on false flags that have proven, that are historically accurate. And where was the media? Not once did any of the media, like the New York Times, call it out when it happened or after it happened. It was always the outsider. So today you're going to hear about a false flag right now as we're speaking. And you're going to hear detailed accounting of how the BBC has engaged in fake news that is being reported as real on CNN and the major media. You haven't heard this before. This is brand new. This will shock you. So the BBC News caught staging fake news chemical attacks. And then we're going to also look at something Great Britain is doing. The average person doesn't care if they don't have privacy, it seems. That every single piece of communication that you have, when you're in your car, what you're talking about, when you're in a home and you're just relaxing with yourself or family, they're watching and recording every single conversation if you're in front of one of their devices, a cell phone, a new television. If you doubt me, go over to your new television. In fact, go over to your computer. Gently take your finger across the top of the screen where the black rim is, and you'll suddenly hit a little bump. That's a camera, and that's a recorder. Now, put a piece of black tape over that, but just remember, everything that you've been doing and saying in the privacy of your home, they now have on record. Gee whiz. Wonder how that would go down if you were ever brought in for any charge, and now they can bring that against you. Why aren't we concerned about this? That is a second issue I want to address on our talkback segment today. Why Americans are not concerned about the loss of their freedoms, including privacy. Why have we not marched against that? Why have there been no protests against that? Why have there been no demonstrations anywhere that I'm aware of in the United States against the National Defense Authorization Act, with the exception of Chris Hedges and a small demonstration down in Washington? But why do they need that information? Why should we allow government technocrats and bureaucrats and private corporations have access to what goes on in the privacy of our lives? And why is the younger generation, the millennials, the majority, absolutely clueless about any of this, or they don't care. That could come back to haunt them. So we have that we're going to play also today, that England just passed the most draconian Privacy Act in the world. It's even worse than China. And that's kind of hard to imagine. Why? And there were no protests at all. So that's our program. A lot to share. First off, keep calm, because if you don't, you could end up having a microstroke and not even know it. Sometimes you'll know if you have a microstroke, where if you lose your balance, if you fall. But generally, there are not a whole lot of symptoms beyond that. You might be a little lightheaded, but no one would know it because it's not easy to determine that. This is from the University of Sydney. Quote, research reveals that the risk of a heart attack is 350% higher in the 2 hours following a burst of intense anger. Well, that would mean that virtually everyone at the local station, the BI station board, should have had a heart attack. About 3,000 of them by now. All you hear is anger. There are people who stay angry all the time for no particular reason. They're just angry people. We've all met them. And if you don't believe them, just speak with them and you'll see how angry they are. Well, it's going to cost you a heart attack. This is published in the European Journal of Acute Cardiovascular Care. And this is the first Australian study to investigate the link between your emotional outbreaks, meaning your trigger mechanisms, and the risk of severe cardiac episodes. Quote, our findings confirm what has been suggested in prior studies and anecdotal evidence, even in films, that episodes of intense anger can act as a trigger for a heart attack. And that was according to Dr. Thomas Buckley on the study. So if you feel that something is making you angry, pull back for a moment. Go to neutral and just ask yourself, it's just information. I don't have to process it as a personal attack. Stay neutral. Just stay calm. Breathe. Breathe deeply. Relax yourself. That's how you deal with these episodes. Otherwise, the yelling, the screaming, the outburst, it's Russian roulette. You're putting yourself at risk. Now, from Trinity College in Dublin, inflammation turns our mitochondria into toxic factories. But first, understand that mitochondria are what allows us to have energy. When your mitochondria diminish or they're damaged as you age, that's why you're tired. You take longer to do something. You don't have the energy, the vitality you once had. And so you pass on a lot of things that at one time in your life would have been, you know, joyful for you to engage in. So when they're damaged, historically, there was nothing you could do to undamage them. Well, the good news is today we can change that. Here's what the study says. Quote, the role of the macrophage in inflammation is complex and wide-ranging, and learning how to control inflammation could have huge implications for the treatment of many diseases. Breaking research discovers how macrophages turn mitochondria into toxic chemicals producing inflammatory promoters. Now, we know that inflammation plays a significant role in a number of serious medical conditions, such as heart disease, cancer, diabetes, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, fibromyalgia, arthritis, all of those, gingivitis, periodontal conditions, that all requires inflammatory agents. Bacteria, pro-inflammatory. Viruses, pro-inflammatory. Alcohol, massively pro-inflammatory. Caffeine, pro-inflammatory. Sugar, artificial sweeteners. Cooking of foods at high temperatures, pro-inflammatory. Soft drinks, pro-inflammatory. So when you think about how many of those agents people consume on a daily basis, all day long, all they've done from the morning when they've had their bacon and eggs and toast and or their sugar-coated cereal and milk, they've turned on inflammation. Then at lunch, the hamburgers, the hot dogs, inflammation. In the evening, the steaks, inflammation. And it's all about the macrophages. These are the big eaters, meaning they're there as part of how to eat in your blood. And they're a type of white blood cell that engulf and digest cellular debris and foreign substances. And these biological dustbins, just imagine a dust, dusting up the debris. That's what the macrophages do. They can get turned around in such a way that they stimulate the mitochondria. Then the mitochondria are no longer able to do what they're supposed to do. So how do we reverse this? Well, here's the good news. First, get off everything that's pro-inflammatory. Go to lots of juices. You would benefit so much if you took 1 week out of your life and you started the day with 1 teaspoon of apple cider vinegar, 1 teaspoon of pure fresh lemon juice, 1 teaspoon of pure ginger juice, and dilute those 3 teaspoons into 16 ounces of green apple, celery, and cucumber juice. That will help realkalize, it'll help deacidify, it helps turn off pain, and it helps flush a lot of debris out. Then later in the day, have yourself another juice. Ideally, watermelon, cantaloupe together with grapes. That's the great rejuvenator. Now, the blueberries, the raspberries, strawberries, blackberries, pomegranate, and cherries, that actually rebuilds cells. It has phytonutrients that can actually replace damaged with non-damaged. So, in effect, you have good things happening in the mitochondria. And then there are nutrients such as alpha-lipoic acid and PPG and also PPQ and glutamine. Those are very important for helping with the mitochondria. So take those. Those are all, along with resveratrol and NAD, those rejuvenate. Actually, those are all anti-aging. Your 4 most important anti-aging nutrients are L-carnosine, NAD, resveratrol, and alpha-lipoic acid. Those are terrific for you. Make sure you're getting those on a regular basis. So they told us the bad news, but at least we know what we shouldn't be taking, and now you got the good news. And also, probiotics can ease the severity of multiple sclerosis. This is from Cashin University Medical Sciences. Quote, patients with multiple sclerosis whose diets were supplemented with probiotics demonstrated a reduction in the severity of the condition as well as improvements to their mental health. So I would suggest 10 billion with a B probiotics 3 times a day if you have multiple sclerosis. I also suggest some other things. If you're able to get hyperbaric oxygen, that is terrific, but make sure you're on a cleansing diet. And for women who want to have better muscle functioning, stronger muscles, according to the University of Glasgow, published in the American Journal of Clinical Nutrition, fish oil supplements improve muscle function, and especially in women over the age of 50. They had a study where they took the omega-3 fatty acids each day and improved their muscle function substantially. So who doesn't want stronger muscles, better functioning muscles? That's the latest on health and healing. I want to shift over now to follow up on something that was said by a person in an audio clip that we played about how bad chemotherapy is, and he went on to also share his opinion that the reason we're getting all this chemotherapy is because the doctors can profit off of it and making hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars a year. In addition to what the patient pays for the hospitalization, the treatments in the hospital, this is separate. This is every time you get one of those chemotherapies. This is one new study. The article, which we posted on our website, I think we posted over 120 articles in the last 24 hours in different categories. The latest on anti-aging, the latest on women's health issues, the latest on environmental issues, every single 24 hours, all throughout the day and in the evening. I've hired people who do nothing but review the world literature for the best quality information, citable information, verify it, and then we post it. And we do, well, the most in the world that I'm aware of on progressive issues. So we have this up here, so you can read the whole article. But here's what it says, and this is from Prevent Disease. The failure of chemotherapy, as more patients abstain from the treatment, more survive. Quote, cancer cases have increased by more than 30% in the last decade, and half of all cases globally are in that figure, and they're ending up in deaths, according to a new report from the Global Burden of Disease Cancer Collaboration, published by the Journal of the American Medical Association's Oncology. And moreover, the overall contribution of cytotoxic chemotherapy to five-year survival in adults is below 3%. There you have the second source telling us that it's only 3% survive. Now, here's what's interesting. They went on to show that you can reach 5 years without dying, and suddenly you're put into the cured category, even though you later die of the cancer. So it's not cancer-free and cured. It's simply you're still alive. That means that that 3% figure would be even less. So my suggestion is that you pay careful attention to the truth about chemotherapy before you get it. If you get it, that's your business. But right now, everybody's getting standard treatment. And why? There's so many good articles and books and films documenting the dangers of orthodox approaches, but the success of alternative treatments. We have Dr. Brzezinski, and we had therapies of Dr. Rivisi and Livingston Wheeler and Burton that proved beyond a shadow of a doubt that not only were they alive 5 years later with no chemotherapy or radiation, but they actually had no cancer in their body. And yet that is nowhere to be found anywhere in the media. This is a separate study, and this is from Life Extension. Quote, research, chemotherapy can cause metastasis. As, quote, as if the pressure caused by chemotherapy treatment was not enough, the results of the research conducted by Professor Schacht may provide a new cause of alarm. In a series of research studies on animals, human cancer tumors in culture, and in indirect also on cancer patients themselves, they found that the therapies are not working, especially the chemotherapy is not working. So there's a separate one. We're going to take a break and come right back. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us. I want to share this, and then I'm going to open it up after our audio clip for TalkBack, where you can share your point of view on the topic. Here is the other issue. This is from Owen McCormick of Truthout, which, by the way, Truthout is on that blacklist. It is a fake news site. It is not. President Obama's lesser-known legacy, arms dealer-in-chief. And then it goes on to talk about that President Obama has sold more weapons of mass destruction and arms to Middle Eastern countries than any president in American history. And it's, in fact, the numbers are staggering. They're over $200 billion. Actually, the latest one is the largest channel for U.S. arms exports total, $169 billion. And that was through the Pentagon's Foreign Military Sales Program. But that's only one figure. There are other figures to different ones. And give you an example, President George W. Bush, throughout his 8 years, sold $30 billion. So we're talking about massive amounts of weapons. And so if you wonder, how is it these terrorists, how's these people who've never been to high school or college, who have no money, how did they end up with all these very high-tech, sophisticated weapons and seemingly endless supplies of them? Well, it's because we sold them to countries, including Turkey, member of NATO. Turkey, that is run by this little dictator, who is also a person that's bringing back Sharia and eliminating their open society policy. They are losing any sense of democracy they once had, which they did have. And it's more of a theocracy because he's influenced by the more radical conservative imams. In any case, he, Erdogan, in Turkey, and his son have been stealing massive amounts of oil from Iraq and from Syria, bringing it back in, selling it on the black market at $20 a barrel, pocketing that. He also has hospitals right inside the border. So when ISIS or al-Nusra, other fighters, many of the terrorist groups, go into a country and are injured, they're brought back and helped back to health. They're trained. They have safe passages. And the United States, in all that time, over 14 months, never once bombed a single supply convoy of up to 12,000 trucks. And no one ever challenged them on that. No media ever said to Hillary Clinton, who was supportive of this, this was under her tenure as Secretary of State, or the president, why is it that you say you have a war against terrorists and ISIS, and yet here are all these thousands upon thousands of trucks filled with oil that was stolen out of Syria, Iraq, and you don't bomb one of them, and they're making between $1 to $4 million a day, and all that's going to continue to support them. But in any case, why is it that this administration and this president has not been challenged on supplying weapons to those who would then use them in regime change or against us? That's our question. Our talkback number is 888-874-4888, 888-874-4888. Also, why is it with so much information on how to prevent cancer or natural alternative approaches to it, why is it there's only a handful, and I know them all, there's only a handful of doctors who are holistic oncologists? Why do you believe we have not looked at the more natural approaches to disease? And by the way, it's also true for heart disease, for diabetes, for virtually any mental or emotional condition. People go to orthodox route. I'd like your opinion, your feedback on that. And here's one other thing that concerns me. On the one hand, we have an incoming president who is going to drain the swamp. Well, here's the latest on that. And this is from The Intercept, from Zaid Jilani. Hillary Clinton's corrupt establishment is now advising Donald Trump. Quote, "The establishment," Donald Trump famously said during his closing argument for the presidency, "has trillions of dollars at stake in this election." He described a, quote, "global power structure that is responsible for the economic decisions that have robbed our working class, stripped our country of its wealth, and put that money into the pockets of a handful of large corporations and political entities," end quote. He asked the country to be brave enough to vote this corruption out of the establishment. And then he turns right around, and virtually every single appointment he has made, no exceptions, every single one has been these pro-establishment corrupt people. So much for those of you who thought that somehow he was honest on any level. Just remember, sociopaths are never honest. They just make it seem like they're honest. They can be very charming. And here's an example of why you should be concerned. This is from Reuters from Valerie Volkovsky, Trump advisors aim to privatize the oil-rich Indian reservations. Ah, maybe that's why he's now said that, oh, when he's president officially, he's going to make that pipeline go right across that Indian land, irrespective of how it might be adulterating the water under the rivers or creating a disrespect for their burial grounds. I'll quote this, quote, Native American reservations cover just 2% of the United States, but they may contain about a fifth of the nation's oil and gas, along with a vast coal reserve. Now, a group of advisors to President-elect Donald Trump on Native American issues wants to free those resources from what they call a suffocating federal bureaucracy that holds title to 56 million acres of tribal lands. Two chairmen of the coalition told Reuters in exclusive interviews. The group proposes to put those lands, Native American lands, into private ownership, privatizing their lands. You think we're Greece? Oh, by the way, I'm interviewing for an hour the former liberal and very progressive Minister of Finance for Greece after the program right now, and I'll play that on an upcoming full show, because I have to do some traveling, and I'll put that in. That'll be an interesting conversation, because you want an example of what you shouldn't do, then look at what the European Union did, Germany heading that effort to Greece. You know, they say that this is a politically explosive idea that could upend more than a century of policy designed to preserve Indian tribes on U.S.-owned reservations, which are governed by tribal leaders as sovereign nations. The tribes have rights to use the land, but they do not own it. They can drill it and reap the profits, but only under regulations that are far more burdensome than those applied to private property. Quote, we should take tribal land away from public treatment, said a man named Mark Wayne Mullen, a Republican U.S. representative from Oklahoma, and a Cherokee tribe member who is co-chairing Trump's Native American Affairs Coalition. Quote, as long as we can do it without unintended consequences, I think we'll have a broad support around Indian country, end quote. Well, show me anything the government's ever done when it comes to doing something in our interest that didn't have unintended consequences. Just take a look at our country today and our infrastructure, and look at all the places that we've made efforts and they backfired. Don't touch the Native American land. It should not be put into private hands by private corporations to be drilled. And all it's going to do is destroy it. And they're already destroying it. In fact, from the Canada border to Texas, you have what is called the Great Grasslands. And I took the time recently to drive in every state, through the whole state, circling around to make sure I saw everything. I wanted to get a good grasp of what was happening in that area. And the only way you can't trust the news reports. You have to get there, get out of the car, and talk with people, lots of people. And if you travel in the summertime, you see the beauty of lush fields in Montana and Wyoming and in the mountain and the valleys of Colorado, gorgeous. And the Blue Lake up in Utah. But it's all going. Why? This is from Common Dreams. Goodbye grasslands, goodbye birds, goodbye carbon sink. Much attention has been given to the deforestation in the Amazon and the environmental impact that go with it. But just in a year and a half ago, the Great American Plains, an area stretching from Texas to Canada, actually lost more acreage of grasslands than Brazil lost to deforestation. That's according to the World Wildlife Fund. And that's huge. Why? Because when you're developing that land, you're tearing out so much of what should be there that captures the carbon and keeps it in the soil. Putting a spotlight on the regional trend is a new report from the organization finds that an area the size of Kansas, 53 million acres, has been converted from grasslands to annual crop planting, like corn and soy. By the way, that'd be genetically engineered corn and soy. And we lost 3.7 million acres in just a five-year period. That's according to the first report on that. So what's happening is monoagriculture, a single crop each year, which will take out the nitrogen in the soil, destroy those tall grasses, and then in the wintertime, after it's been harvested, the soil is all cut up. And what happens is the rain comes, the freezing comes, and then in the spring, when the water is melted, that topsoil is washed away. And so they go in and put artificial fertilizers down to grow their genetically modified crops. And they do this over and over again. So in effect, they're creating another great dust bowl in the Great Plains, in the grasslands. You probably weren't aware of that because it's nowhere on the media, but at least be aware of it. So we can start to boycott the people who are doing it, the products they're creating. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to take some calls. If you have opinions on the topics that I mentioned, you can talk to us on 888-874-4888. And we're going to take a brief break and come back. And then you're going to hear about real fake news. And not by a small person, the largest news service in the world, the BBC, actually faking it. And these are other journalists exposing it. Back in a moment. Now, let's see how the BBC News was caught staging fake news chemical attacks in Syria. And remember how the major media and the President of the United States and John Kerry and members of Congress, members of the Pentagon, and all these so-called experts popped up saying, oh, my God, now you got to create a red line and because now Assad's killing his own people. Listen to this.
Stunning fakery in the alleged chemical weapons attack, according to a former UK ambassador. Coming up.
The British Broadcasting Corporation is accused of staging chemical weapons attack. The CIA admits planting CNN reporters. And international lawyers call for journalists inciting violence to be expelled.
August 2013, and NATO leaders can't get the public on side for the imminent bombing of Syria. Suddenly, the BBC says it was filming a small rural hospital, and a game-changing atrocity happens right there, the moment they were filming.
Last month, we were filming the doctors working at this hospital when victims of an incendiary bomb attack on a school playground started pouring in.
Absolute chaos and carnage here. It must be some sort of napalm.
But a highly skeptical public stayed hostile to military intervention. Exactly 1 month later, the leaders are trying to pin a chemical weapons attack on Syria without success. The BBC airs exactly the same footage but digitally alters the word napalm for, quote, chemical weapons, hoping no one will notice.
Absolute chaos and carnage here. It must be some sort of chemical weapon.
Not only did folks notice, but it unleashed a massive public investigation, which made some extremely disturbing findings.
This is the total fabrication. From beginning to end of an atrocity with BBC reporter Ian Pannell standing amidst a tableau of very bad actors. This is completely beyond the pale.
This audio analysis by media investigator Robin Upton shows both versions are identical and from the same speech. The BBC then digitally altered the words from napalm to chemical weapon, the exact justification NATO was finding difficult to prove. That game-changing allegation was made by two doctors that had travelled with the BBC, who claimed the number of sudden casualties is, quote, overwhelming. What kind of doctor, notes media investigator Robert Stewart, gives interviews when she is surrounded by supposedly seriously burned and dying teenagers?
Get anyone who isn't a patient out of here.
When a nurse does finally start to help, her order to get anyone who isn't a patient out of here doesn't apply to the cameramen. Even worse, notes Stewart, is the bizarre acting which starts when the man in the centre gives the sign.
What do you need to see? We are just human beings. We want to live, you know? Isn't it our right to live?
Dr. Roller, on whose sole claim the BBC sends napalm chemical weapons allegations around the world, is actually the daughter of Syrian rebel Musa al-Qadi. The parallel to the Gulf War and nurse Naira is stunning. Congressman said the nurse's tearful testimony that Iraqis were killing children swung their vote in favour of war.
Took the incubators and left the children to die on the cold floor.
Nurse Naira became the mainstream's darling, but once the vote had safely passed, she admitted inventing the whole thing and was actually the daughter of the Kuwaiti ambassador to Washington, lying to get the public to back war. UK Member of Parliament George Galloway joins us. Thank you very much for coming on. Why do we get almost identical claims before each war, which then prove lies?
Well, the Bush and Blair Corporation, as it became in the run-up to the Iraq War, has almost entirely lost its reputation for journalistic integrity. A full inquiry must be launched into why the BBC used a piece of material which was not just wrong, but was falsified, and falsified with the purpose of propelling our country into war. That's not what the British public pays its BBC license fee for, so that it can be tricked into a war.
In a statement, the British Broadcasting Corporation says it stands by its report. The Syrian opposition denies the allegations. Investigators such as Robert Stewart note their many questions sent officially to the corporation remain unanswered. There are also numerous such precedents, both in this war and previous invasions. Brilliant is how a top Western official called tricking the public through routine faking of atrocities and commonly aired on mainstream bulletins. Nightly news shows just a few cases of what happened next after mainstream cameras ended their reports.
It shows people putting on, you know, fake wounds. It shows there's some guys there. Look, there's their head wounds. Peace, everybody. You know, we're doing the right thing. We're creating fake propaganda. I mean, it's not even real atrocities. So they're there lined up. There was another video. It shows some guy kicking his leg and with a fake blood wound. Here's a guy who wakes up from his funeral. Watch this. He's awake. He's not even really dead. And so, I mean, this is just crazy what goes on. There was another video that was shot of a supposed massacre. And it cuts. You don't see the whole thing. When you go to the Al Jazeera footage, it shows real quick clips of a guy kicking his leg, and he's got blood coming out, which turned out to be fake blood.
The so-called activists behind the fakes are by far the most popular source, despite them never being verified and regularly disproved as fabrications to justify more NATO arms. The term activist may sound like a well-meaning Western campaigner or charity, but the Foreign Policy Journal notes it's just newspeak for insurgents. The official source on Syria casualties, or what mainstream claims is official, is impressive-sounding organization the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights. Reuters exposed the fact 3 years ago it was not an organization at all, or even working in Syria. It's a single pro-insurgent supporter living in Coventry, England. Here pictured at the Foreign Office after instructions from Britain's foreign minister himself. In leaked footage, ordinary Syrians told the BBC they're tired of its lies and the insurgents they're cheerleading are a tiny minority led by foreign gangs.
BBC?
Why?
Say it. No, BBC, say it.
Because you are talking very bad about Syria. Everybody, when he opens BBC Arabic, he can
here's a lie about Syria. Al Jazeera and Larabia.
But maybe Syria is like any country. Some people support and some people don't support.
No, everybody is support.
So Syria is different.
There is very little people. Maybe 10,000 like that. But the most of people, 22 million, 23 million person support Bashar al-Assad.
But even
and we have not demonstration, we have armed gangs.
Pro-war media is forced to resort to colossal lies since intelligence chiefs revealed to America's top investigative reporter, Cy Hirsch, quote, Obama's cronies are making it up. All the evidence actually points to the jihadis staging the chemical attacks.
The attack was not the result of the current regime, the high-level intelligence officer wrote in an email to a colleague. The guys are throwing their hands in the air and saying, how can we help this guy, Obama, when he and his cronies in the White House make up the intelligence as they go along, said a former senior intelligence official. The distortion, he said, reminded him of the Gulf of Tonkin incident.
What?
The president wants a white one.
He wants a white one? A white? Let me talk.
He's mobilizing the 6th Fleet.
The thought a U.S. president would start a horrific foreign war by staging a pretty female front as a victim made people laugh.
The young Albanian national fleeing in this video is attempting to escape terrorist reprisals in her village.
Meet Julia, if that's her real name, the celebrated face mass media call the creator of a viral video asking the U.S. to help Ukraine. It was actually created by the State Department's National Endowment for Democracy to mask the fact Washington joined Ukraine's thugs and murdered their way to power. A leaked phone call with EU Foreign Minister Ashton revealed the opposition planned and executed the infamous sniper violence of Kiev, shooting both the police and their own supporters in the back. Study found a total of 250 mainstream sources lied that the snipers belonged to Yanukovych. Only 7 of the entire mass media even mentioned the bombshell leak, and those that did framed the report to suggest it couldn't possibly be true. Former Wall Street Journal editor Paul Craig Roberts calls the coverage of Ukraine a new low in the history of the mainstream, which is now simply what he describes as a ministry of lies. Investigative reporter John Helmers uncovered mainstream staging demonstrations and attempts to provoke disorder. He joins us. Great to speak to you. One US scholar notes the coverage has now become Orwellian. What's going on?
So the weaker your government, the more interested the leader might be in threatening Russia to look strong at home when it's obvious he's not strong at home and couldn't get re-elected. That's particularly true, let's say, of the French president or the Prime Minister Cameron at the moment. And arguably, President Obama is not only a lame duck, but having great difficulty in putting together a winning coalition for the Democratic Party's next candidate for president. When you've got weak political leaders, you need to look stronger than you are in public opinion in the media. So there's this process of misleading and disinforming.
The Senate committee inquiry revealed CIA running mainstream media in the vast operation known as Mockingbird. More than 400 journalists and media chiefs claiming to watchdog the government were the exact opposite, joining to mask US government crime at home and abroad. The operation continues despite agency denials. Counterpunch discovered CIA imposing agents on firms like CNN. Former CIA exec Michael Schur notes British media are even closer to intel targets.
Big pieces of wood, metal, to use as barricades.
Schur adds the BBC now takes the lead in regime change operations that cause, quote, anarchy and violence. Let's speak to Francis Boyle, Professor of International Law at Illinois University. Great to talk to you. How can nations stop war media that now perform the CIA's covert operations?
Certainly have their visas revoked and sent packing home, because I really don't understand why some of these countries keep, European journalists, certainly in the United States, why they let them into the countries. Because they're just using their coverage to promote war and military intervention at home. In addition, Bush Jr. administration lifted what was supposed to be the previous prohibition that intelligence agents were not supposed to infiltrate the media. You know, you have to be very careful, certainly dealing with U.S. Reporters, whether or not they're intelligence agents.
Banning active units of the military, also known as war stream media, shows how serious the situation now is. Their policies aren't popular with their own viewers. Mainstream audiences are in free fall. CNN and MSNBC have shed half their entire viewership in the last year alone. The question is, how many more coups will they stage or help before they lose the public's trust altogether? Seek truth from facts. This is The Truth Seeker.
Just to give you an idea, you heard something just now that proved that the media, including the BBC, are staging and faking for political change. Now, we also know from WikiLeaks, we can thank, that anywhere between 500 billion, with a B, billion dollars a year, is spent on creating false news, false information. That's huge. That's a gigantic number. And as part of the overall budget, but that doesn't surprise me that they're creating fake news. 500 million, I'm sorry, not billion. But here's the latest. Never trust what the government says without verification. Check and verify before you accept anything that any of the media is telling you, because you do not appreciate how many trolls they have, how many infiltrators, provocateurs they have into every movement trying to disrupt it, and also how they stage events. We saw how that young lady staged the whole lie, and it caught America's attention that, gee whiz, you mean the Iraqis and Saddam Hussein are throwing babies out of incubators on the floor in a Kuwait hospital so they could steal the incubators? I believe that was Helen Knowlton that was behind that, and the woman was the daughter of the ambassadors, you heard. Lies. There were no repercussions. There's never a repercussion when you're caught lying, and that's unfortunate. By the way, I just saw from Craig Whitehead of the Washington Post that the Pentagon buries evidence of $125 billion, with a B, in bureaucratic waste. Now, you know I've been telling you about how many contractors there are in Washington and why, whether you're a Republican or Democrat, it's irrelevant. It's who controls the entire flow of money. And, quote, so the plan to do something about this was killed. The Pentagon imposed secrecy restrictions on the data making up the study, which ensured that no one could replicate the findings. And a 77-page report of the summary had been leaked. Now, to give you an idea of how big this is, there are more than 197,093 contractors for the Navy, and each one of those contractors is making huge amounts of money. The Air Force has 122,470 contractors, and the Army has 189,188 contractors, and it goes on. So you have over a million people who are all lining up to get their checks for their companies or individuals. That's totaling waste, just waste alone, over $29 billion a year. So that's why you have these people showing up on television. That's why you have them trying to keep Americans in a fear state that we must rebuild the, you know, make our Army and Navy and Air Force and Marines stronger. We are the largest armed forces in the world. We have the most advanced systems in the world. We're wasting $1 trillion a year. There's about $300 to $400 billion that is spent. We only need about $200 billion a year. We should be closing down bases, closing overseas bases, stopping all these wasteful and absolutely redundant weapon systems, completely junk the F-35, get rid of these, and then put that money towards a Marshall Plan to de-ghettoize America, bringing factories, small businesses, quality of life and housing into every community in the United States. That's how that money should be spent each year. And if you did that, then clearly within, 3 years, you have about 15 to 20 million employed Americans living better because of a living wage, having savings, don't have the debt. So I don't trust anything they say when it comes to the military. Let's say hello to Rand from Montreal. Hi, Rand. Your question.
Hello, Gary. I wanted to just to discuss this glyphosate, the Roundup. It is tragic that for 35 years, the FDA hid the research, wouldn't allow it to be published, because this stuff, apparently, according to a chemist who was following it, following this situation, it actually goes right to the molecular structure of the plant that it is supposed to be helping, and the possibility this thing is carcinogenic and has been going on for such a long time. And what is tragic about it, actually, urine, according to this chemist, urine is a far better thing to use for herbicides than the stuff which is causing cancer throughout the world.
I would agree with most of that. The only reason that you would ever want to use urine on plants, though they have done it historically on insect bites and plants in Europe, not here in the United States, is because it's not practical. We have natural organic methods of controlling pests. If I make a big bottle, let's say a gallon, and I put some apple cider vinegar and garlic juice in there with cayenne pepper, it kills everything. Doesn't hurt the plant, but kills everything on that plant. And I spray that once a week. I have. If you go up on my website, you'll see some of my experimental gardens, because I teach homesteading and organic farming. You'll see there's no loss of plants. Even real close, 2 inch away from the plant, you'll see it's perfect because of using natural pesticides. But your point about the DNA being altered of the plant, in which case we eat the plant, our DNA could be altered, is correct. That's why we're asking people to go organic, not GMO. From Rand from Montreal, thank you for calling in. Let me mention also, because we got a lot of calls, people wanting to know how can they listen to the 2-hour special I did last night, where we had some phenomenal people giving input on fake news and the new McCarthyism. You can listen to the archives by telephone. Well, let me give you the number, 701-719-9976, 701-719-9976, and you can download the show and listen. We're out of time. I want to thank you all for listening. I look forward to sharing more tomorrow. Have a nice day. A happy day. Oh.